Welcome to The Confident Wallet, a personal finance podcast series from the Washington Post Brand Studio and T. Rowe Price. My name is Kevin McCormally, and I'm the former Chief Content Officer at Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine. I'll be your host and moderator. Today's discussion features a roundtable conversation with savvy experts designed to enable listeners to make more informed financial decisions. If you're considering self-employment or are already one of the 14.6 million self-employed people in the U.S., you may have a tough time relating to traditional financial advice. In this episode, our experts will share money management tips for self-employed workers on preparing for taxes, retirement savings, and beyond. My guests include Kathy Kristoff, editor of SideHustle.com. That's SideHustle.com. And Roger Young, a certified financial planner at T. Rowe Price. Welcome to the show, Roger. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Kathy, I want to thank you for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
The purpose of today's discussion is to explore some considerations for current or prospective self-employed listeners. So let's get started. Roger, without an employer guaranteeing a paycheck, how can you best prepare for the possible highs and lows in your business and therefore your income?
Well, this is an area where there is a difference between self-employed people and people who are employees. We recommend for everyone that you have an emergency fund, but for most people, we're recommending a fund of, say, 3 to 6 months' worth of your expenses. But for self-employed people, it should be higher than that, if at all possible. Now, I've seen recommendations out there that it should be 12 months' worth of expenses, even 24 months. Personally, I worry that 24 months might be a little unrealistic and people might never start businesses or go self-employed if they need that much. Kathy, I'm curious about your thoughts. What works for people you talk to?
You know, it completely varies by the business. The thing is, some businesses, even self-employed businesses, are much more reliable in terms of income. Others are not at all. And so for people who are going to start a business, they say you're going to start a tech company, you need to develop software, you need to do all sorts of stuff. You have to expect that you're not going to get paid for a year to say 3 or even 4 years. And so you're going to need a whole lot more money set aside than somebody who, for instance, is a freelance writer and is probably going to be able to get at least some gigs even from the get-go.
So you think you should have 3 or 4 years worth of income in the bank before you strike out on your own?
No, not what I'm saying. It completely depends on the type of business you have. And if you have a type of business that's going to be capital intensive and is not going to produce anything until you produce something that requires time, you should be really prepared to finance that amount of time, either on your own or with outside funding. If you have a simpler business, if you have a side hustle, I mean, you can earn money tomorrow with a lot of the opportunities that are on our site, but not all businesses are like that. And so you have to take a realistic look at the type of company you are starting or the type of self-employment you're starting.
One other thought on that is it can also depend on your personal situation. So if you're married and your spouse does have a regular income, obviously that gives you a little more cushion. Maybe you can practice living off of one salary for a little while and not necessarily have to have as enormous an emergency fund as someone who's single or a couple with just the new business income.
Well, and that kind of planning, Kathy, makes me want to ask, are there any special rules for budgeting for people who want to start an own business, striking out on their own? Is there some secrets that you've learned or that you've heard about that might help people budget in this situation?
You know, in this case, I'm not a giant person for budgets, except for when you have your own small business. And then I would say, not only do you need a budget, you need software. I would recommend that you go out and buy one of the good software programs that help you separate your business expenses from your personal expenses and also track everything, because you're really going to need to know what your burn rate is. Because what you want to do if you're starting a capital intensive business in particular is 6 months or a year before you need the capital, you need to start figuring out where it's going to come from. So by using software programs, you're going to be able to see that pretty easily and average your monthly negative if you have a monthly negative, and that will help you plan ahead.
Speaking of personal and business expenses, Roger, should you set up separate bank accounts for your business and your personal? How important is it to separate your money that way from the get-go?
I started my career as an accountant, and I would say, yes, I would strongly recommend a separate bank account. You don't want commingling of funds if you can at all avoid it. And honestly, it's fairly easy and inexpensive to set up your own bank account for your business. It'll save you a lot of hassle in the long run. You know, in terms of credit cards, I would even say you want to think hard, depending on the type of business, whether you even need a business credit card at first. Obviously, credit has its potential pitfalls if you're not careful. But if you do think you need a credit card, I would keep that separate as well. The anecdote I'll share is I was in a rock band back in the 80s and 90s. And once we started actually making money that wasn't going immediately back into pizza and equipment, once we had that profit, we did recognize, you know, you do need a dedicated bank account. And that did make life a little easier from that point forward.
Okay, well, let's talk about taxes. When you work for someone else, the boss shaves off part of your salary each payday and sends it to federal and state tax authorities. How do you handle the tax bill when you're self-employed?
Yeah, you need to do all of this yourself, which comes as a big shock to people. And it's one of the reasons why you need to have an emergency fund, because if all of a sudden you go, oh, every quarter I need to start sending in taxes on the money that I earned, it's a cash flow issue that a lot of people just don't think about, particularly if they've just moved from being employed to being self-employed. Because it's, you know, if you're doing well, it's thousands of dollars every 3 months, or it's not exactly every 3 months, as you know, Kevin. The IRS works in mysterious ways. But several times a year, you need to come up with a big chunk of cash to pay the government. And you have to do that yourself. You have to send in the forms yourself. Again, the software will help. Once you really become serious about starting your own business, I really think you need a tax accountant. I hired a gal a few years ago and was shocked at how much better she was at this than I was.
And you do have to remember some of the quirks. You know, you don't necessarily need to be a tax expert, but remember that you're going to pay the self-employment tax yourself. So instead of your payroll tax of 7-point-something% that you pay as an employee, now you're paying the full 15%. And you get a tax deduction for that on your federal tax, but it's still, you know, a chunk of money that you wouldn't have had to think about before.
Yes. Well, speaking of deductions, I know there's a new deduction in the law for self-employed people that allows, under certain circumstances, for up to 20% of self-employment income to basically be tax-free. How does that work?
Yeah, that is definitely a significant change with the new tax law. And yes, this was a 20% deduction created for business income. Now, that's for people who report business income on their individual return, which is most people who are starting out businesses. You know, most people aren't going directly to a C corporation where you're paying at the corporate level. This is often called pass-through income. So the money passes through directly to your individual income return. And if you're in a number of businesses, that 20% is unlimited. But then for businesses where it relies on your professional reputation, that deduction starts to phase out.
But only at really high income levels.
Fairly high income levels. You know, it's around $150,000 for a single filer now and, you know, $300,000 for a married couple. Of course, those numbers are subject to change and probably go up over time. So yes, so a lot of people listening are going to say, oh, that's not an issue for me now. But at some point, it could be potentially. So you do want to talk to a tax professional, as Kathy was recommending. It's complicated and you don't want to screw that up.
Yeah. Kathy, do you think that this deduction is going to be important to people who do the side hustles that you write so much about?
Oh, absolutely. It's huge. The thing to remember is you're actually taking off your normal deductions, all of your normal business expenses you deduct first, and then you get the 20% on top of that. So it's a giant decrease in your marginal tax rate. So yes, it's going to make a huge difference to side hustlers.
Now, you do want to be careful, even though this makes it more appealing to start a business from a financial standpoint. You can't just decide, oh, I'm going to go from being an employee to now I'm going to be a contractor. The IRS does frown upon people who are really employees pretending to be contractors, right?
Well, besides that, I mean, there are a lot of expenses to being a contractor. You lose your normal employee benefits, your employer contribution to your 401k plan, their half of the self-employment tax. Believe me, the 20% deduction does not make up for what you lose.
That's right. But of course, if you're just starting out and not switching from employee to self-employed, you're not giving that up. But you're going to need all these tax breaks because, of course, as you point out, you're not going to get all the fringe benefits, Kathy, that you'd have as an employee. You've got to buy your own insurance. Roger, what kind of insurance do you recommend and when do people need to buy it and how expensive that's going to be?
Well, I think health insurance is critical to have. If you have spouse's coverage, that's obviously great. The Affordable Care Act coverage is a good fallback. You know, it may be expensive, especially if you're not subsidized, but at least it's an option. I would say life insurance is also very important if someone else depends on you and your income. The good thing there is term insurance does tend to be fairly affordable, especially for young, healthy people, even if you're not on a group plan. The third I'd consider is disability coverage. So again, if you're young, you're probably more likely to be disabled than to die at a young age, and that could be a major financial hardship. The challenge here is that it's so much more expensive if you don't have a group plan. I happen to look at what a trade group is in my line of business, and it's doable, but it is a lot more expensive compared to an employer plan. Kathy, I'm curious your thoughts, what you see with the people you talk to.
A lot of people that I know that have side hustles or are full-time self-employed do have a spouse who is working in a traditional job and can get employee benefits through that traditional job. And that is about as ideal of an arrangement as you can have. It's when you're both self-employed that you start having these really expensive decisions about how much insurance you need and how much you can afford to buy. But as you point out, I mean, especially if there's only one of you working, disability insurance becomes really important, but it is for a lot of people absolutely untenable. The price is just out of this world. And so you have to really decide what can I afford and how else can I cover this cost or this risk? And in some cases, that's where you get into the super saving, where you say, okay, I really can't afford to buy disability insurance, but I can afford to set aside a significant amount of my income so that over time, I'm going to build up a couple years worth of living expenses so that if indeed I'm temporarily disabled, I will have something to fall back on.
Let's talk about retirement planning. Out on your own, you're not going to have a boss giving you a sweet 50% match on a 401k. How do you save for retirement if you're self-employed? What options are available? Which makes sense for what kind of person?
There are a lot of different types of vehicles, and I'll talk about a few of them. For a lot of people who are self-employed completely on their own, something called a SEP IRA can make sense. It's fairly easy to set up. It has high contribution limits, so if you are very successful and are in a position to save a lot of money, that enables you to put a lot away. If you have employees, the SEP IRA, the employer has to contribute the same percentage for everyone. So that might not be quite as attractive if you have employees. In that case, you might consider something called a simple IRA. That has lower limits, but it can make sense if you have employees where you want to make some contribution, but not a huge contribution necessarily. You do have to make some level of contributions. A solo 401k is a possibility. That takes a little more administration than the IRA versions, but potentially could enable higher contributions. Again, if you're in that position, we certainly don't want to assume that everyone can sock away $50,000 in one of these plans. And then the last one I'll mention is a personal defined benefit plan. That's kind of like the old style pension plan. And that can be good, especially for people who are older and who are particularly high earners. So in that situation, you can make pretty large tax-deferred contributions to kind of catch up towards retirement. The teacher who taught me my certified financial planner courses like to say, if you have a defined benefit plan, stuff it like a pig. Put as much as possible into it. And again, all of this depends on your own situation, how much savings capacity you have, and what your goals are.
Kathy, what do you see with the self-employed people you know as far as how well they're preparing for retirement? Do they often starve that baby?
Yeah, some people do, but it's just like the regular population. You know, you talk to some people and they have saved a lot and have been saving since they were young. I mean, there's a whole movement of young entrepreneurs who call themselves financial independents, retire early or fire. And they are saving a huge amount of their income. And by the time they're in their 30s, they have hundreds of thousands of dollars saved. And their goal is to not really retire in that traditional sense that we think of, like where I'm never going to work again. It's really that they want to work at their own pace, at their own passions. And they're in marvelous shape, absolutely marvelous shape. And then there are a lot of people that I talk to that have had, you know, life circumstances come along where they were sick or they were disabled or they were divorced multiple times, and it just wreaked havoc with their savings. And so now they're in their 40s and 50s and have practically nothing set aside. So it's all over the map. But I think that really the thing to realize is that you just have to take a realistic assessment of where you are and figure out how to get where you want to be.
That's great. Roger mentioned the employees when it comes to retirement plans. What other things do you need to think about when you think about taking on a partner for your new business or hiring employees? What goes into that planning?
I guess the first thing I'd suggest is always think about the end game. Someday, you are not going to be running this business for, you know, whatever reason, obviously death being the final reason. So you want to make sure that you're prepared for that eventuality. If you're bringing on a partner or working with someone, it's a good idea to get a written agreement. Obviously, there are a lot of expenses that go with having your own business, and one of them can be attorney's fees, right? But having that well ironed out in advance is a good idea. The attorney might recommend something called a buy-sell agreement, which is a way to facilitate an orderly transition if something happens to the business and needs to be broken up or if one of the partners dies. If there's value to that business, you might think about life insurance to help protect the surviving partners and spouses. And then in terms of hiring employees, now you're getting involved with employment law and having to deal with payroll. So definitely get some help in those regards. Don't try to go those alone.
You plan ahead. You look at not just what you want to happen over the next year or two. You look at kind of the legacy you want to leave for yourself and for your business. What's your plan? Are you planning to leave this business to your kids? Is there a kid who's actually going to step up and run it? Or are you going to be selling it before you retire or die? And each of those takes you on a different planning path. And I think you should have that path kind of mapped out really a decade in advance. And certainly if you're not thinking about it 5 years before you want to retire, you're really behind the eight ball. So always keep your eye firmly planted 10 years ahead of you and go in that direction.
I should say, as full disclosure, my band did not have a formal written agreement back when we were, you know, in our teens and 20s. But I will say, when one of our members left, we tried to estimate the value of the equipment that we had amassed and paid him his share. And I think that the treating him fairly helped us all to stay good friends over the years. He's still a good friend. So whether you're doing it formally or informally, making sure that you treat people well at the outset and over time is important.
Always good advice. And when you talk about a path 5 or 10 years, Kathy, is there at some point on that path where you need to diverge into becoming a corporation or a partnership or a limited liability company? How do you make that decision as your business grows when you need more of a structure?
You know, I mean, I think this is one of those things that you just need to be constantly getting advice and keeping a finger on the pulse of your business. You know, at what point am I too big? At what point do I have more liability? I mean, I think when you start a business, you aren't really worried about the liability of your business, or you might not be, because you probably have nothing to take. So assuming, you know, but as the business grows and your assets grow and you have employees to take care of, and there comes a time that you need to have a more formal structure. I think it ends up being kind of obvious when you're in the situation, but actually telling people, oh, here's your trigger point. There's not a trigger point exactly. I mean, have you started to hire employees? Well, now you start to think about, you know, what kind of structure is best for you. Have you started to make a lot of money? Have you amassed a lot of savings? Now, again, you need to start thinking about, do I want an LLC? Do I want to protect what we have here? At what point do you separate your business's finances completely from your personal finances? All those things, I think you decide as you go along.
Yeah, Kathy, I think that's definitely good advice. And just to clarify, in terms of the liability, one of the advantages of a corporate structure, you know, whichever type it would be, is it protects your personal assets so that it makes it harder for someone to sue and then go after your house or your assets that you've amassed separate from the business. And none of the three of us are attorneys, so we have to keep this general. But yeah, that liability issue is a big one. And it, of course, that has to outweigh the additional paperwork requirements and advice that you need to get and regulations, you know, if you're going to a different type of legal structure.
Let me ask each of you if there's any specific resources that you would recommend for self-employed people to get started.
Our website is really not like, you know, if you want to start something completely independent. It's if you want to work for yourself, but you don't have a specific idea of what you want to start. We research, review, and rate more than 250 online platforms that help you make money. There are so many of them out there.
And what's the name of that website?
Side Hustle, SideHustle.com.
Thanks, Kathy. Roger, your
resources? Very cool. I would mention a couple things. Kathy mentioned earlier having some sort of budgeting software or an accounting software for business. I think that's very important. I think some sort of contact management system. So obviously, it depends on your type of business. But if you have prospects in your business, you really can't afford to lose track of those prospects. So whether it's, you know, some fancy system or something that you've developed, you need to be organized in how you manage that. And I'll also just mention the Small Business Administration has a lot of good educational material, and that's sba.gov. I would consider that.
Okay, we're about done here now, but I got a challenge for each of you. We call it keeping you up at night. I'll give you a hypothetical situation that people often don't feel confident about, and you respond with your perspective. Here it is. I've always dreamed about working for myself. What is the first step I need to take to make that happen? Roger?
Going back to the emergency fund, I'd start building your emergency fund now and then take a look at SBA.gov. Talk to people who have been successful in your field. So that's a number of things, but those are all important things for the early stages.
Kathy?
I would agree. You definitely need savings. But the other thing I would tell you to do is think about your passions. What is it that I want to do? There's no limit to the type of business you can start. If you have a service that is valuable and people will pay for it, you can start a business and niche into that topic. And the reason why I emphasize that is because you are going to work harder than you have ever worked before. You should really, really love it.
Okay, one final segment. We call this If You Remember One Thing. And we want to ask each of you to reflect on what we've talked about today and offer one key takeaway for our listeners. Kathy?
It's savings, savings, savings. Be prepared for things to go wrong because they will go wrong. And that is not because you are doing it wrong. It's because life is like that. And particularly when you're running your own operation, there will be a lot of times that you just need to have a little bit of extra cushion. So that's infinitely important.
Okay, thank you, Kathy. Roger?
Well, since Kathy mentioned the emergency fund, I'll come back to my band experience. The wise philosophers Bachman Turner Overdrive once said, chances are you'll go far if you get in with the right bunch of fellows. So you don't have to do everything yourself. Seek out guidance, seek out support from your family, your friends, your business network, qualified professionals, people like accountants and lawyers. You don't have to be a complete solo artist when it comes to having your own self-employment type of business.
Kathy and Roger, I want to thank both of you so much. I think we've helped a lot of people here.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thanks, Kevin. It was good talking with you.
And I want to thank the listeners for listening. And be sure to join us for our next episode on couples and money. And if you like The Confident Wallet, please rate and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. This episode of the Confident Wallet podcast series is provided for general and educational purposes only and is not intended to provide legal, tax, or investment advice. This podcast episode does not provide fiduciary recommendations concerning investments or investment management. It is not individualized to the needs of any specific benefit plan or retirement investor, nor is it directed to any recipient in connection with a specific investment or investment management decision. Investors will need to consider their own circumstances before making an investment decision. All investments involve risk, including possible loss of principal. The views expressed at the time of this presentation may have changed since that time. An IRA should be considered a long-term investment. IRAs generally have expenses and account fees, which may impact the value of the account. Non-qualified withdrawals may be subject to taxes and penalties. Maximum contributions are subject to eligibility requirements. For more detailed information about taxes, consult IRS Publication 590 or a tax advisor regarding personal circumstances. T. Rowe Price, the Bighorn Sheep Design, and the Confident Wallet, collectively and or apart, are trademarks of T. Rowe Price Group, Incorporated. All rights reserved. The trademarks displayed throughout this podcast are the property of their respective owners. T. Rowe Price Investment Services, Incorporated.